party tonight.
All right!
We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
Tonight!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And if you have any TV questions, you can give us a call, too, because Dan Feinberg is about to join us, 312-981-7200. And so, by the way, actor Stephen Strafford is going to be joining us. He's performing in the really hilarious one-man show, Santa Land Diaries, by David Sedaris, over at the Goodman Theater, and he's going to join us to talk about that. But let's welcome back to the show our good friend Dan Feinberg. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, how you been?
Oh, the TV doesn't stop even as we approach the holiday season. It's kind of remarkable.
It is. It's pretty crazy. Well, we've got a lot to talk about because we've got some year-end things that we want to get into and some other other things that you've been writing about. First, I want to ask you about this new version of A Christmas Carol. Guy Pearce was on with Seth Meyers the other night, and I watched it, and I'm always been a big Guy Pearce fan, and I'm interested in this kind of a different take on that story. Correct?
It is a fairly different take on the story. Yes, it's written by Stephen Knight, he of Peaky Blinders, several very good movies, most recently Apple TV Plus's C. It is, among other things, it is a version of the Christmas Carol that children should be actively prevented from seeing because the grown-up details include, for absolutely no reason, periodically Scrooge yelling the F word just because, you know, that's how you know it's mature and adult, I suppose. I don't think it adds anything other than getting rid of the children. There's also a strange psychosexual dynamic to a number of the different interactions between characters, which you may not remember from the Dickens novella, because it's not there. Kids both shouldn't see it because it's got adult subject matter. Also, they would be bored to tears. I suspect adults, while not having a problem with the adult subject matter, will most certainly also be bored to tears. It is a real slog. I mean, you're talking over an hour of screen time before you get the arrival of Jacob Marley as a ghost. You know, that's a long time to be dealing with absolutely nothing. It just sort of stumbles along. It tries to be a character portrait of Ebenezer Scrooge, but it also adds to his misdeeds to the point at which none of the redemptive aspects of the storyline are possible. It's really just kind of gloomy and murky for the sake of being gloomy and murky, and it has no holiday uplift and very little insight into the subject matter. So I was fairly disappointed by this. It was a pretty big misfire for all and sundry, I would say.
Wow, that's too bad. I got it on my DVR. I was really looking forward to it.
I don't know. You could start watching it, and if you get through the first hour and you're not like, oh my God, why is nothing happening in this story? Maybe you'll go along with it. FX is airing it as a solid programming block, as a kind of endless movie. The actual screen time of this is nearing 3 hours. It's also airing on the BBC in the UK over three nights. I can't imagine anyone in the UK watching the first night where nothing happens and feeling any reason at all to come back on a second night. It's just pretty lifeless and gloomy. It's kind of the parody of prestige TV version of A Christmas Carol, where everything's kind of dark and murky and serves no particular purpose. It's like Ozark, only A Christmas Carol.
Wow. Okay, well, that's disappointing. All right, so that's A Christmas Carol, and it is on FX, and it's tonight, actually. It airs on FX.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's I should say tomorrow because it's not midnight yet. So, all right. Now, what about Reprisal? Talk about that.
Reprisal is, if nothing else, wildly difficult to describe and full of actual inspiration. I don't know that I think it's a good TV show, but I think it is definitely a TV show that doesn't look or feel like anything you've seen before. It's you know, to some degree, it's a kind of a rockabilly noir conceit in which Abigail Spencer plays a woman who was left for dead by her boyfriend and her brother, who are part of a kind of gearhead gang. It's all very hard to describe what it all is, because it's sort of circling around 1950s car iconography, but not exactly, you know, being a pastiche. Anyway, she goes out for revenge, and it's this odd world of burlesque dancers and tattooed gang members. Whether it works as a story, I don't know, but it's constantly surprising and constantly full of ideas. And so I can totally imagine people being hooked by how odd and unique it is. I don't know that I was. I think that it moves way too slowly for something as pulpy as it is. I think if you're pulp, you have to be lean and mean, and this is definitely not that. But it's interesting, and I love Abigail Spencer. She has always been great, from Timeless to Rectify, et cetera, et cetera. So I am here for her. It's a good lead role for her. I wish I enjoyed this show more, but it is different enough that I can imagine people digging it.
And it's on Hulu, correct?
Yes.
And it's now, who's behind this?
It is a showrunner who has only worked. Basically, his credits, I believe, include the Crackle TV show Startup. I think that's the extent of the creator's credits. So if this is Hulu kind of taking a leap, Josh Corbin is his name, and it's them taking a leap on someone with an idea. And I don't know if this was exactly what they thought they were getting into. It's kind of bloody and violent and revengey, and the female performances are all really interesting and alive, and the male performances are all really, really boring and disposable, and yet you keep spending time with the guys, and that's a little frustrating because you just want to be like, okay, the women are cool and awesome, let's spend time with them. Mm. And it's not, I guess, committed enough to that. But no, I don't want to be too negative about this, because there's something here, and there's something here of interest. The fact that I didn't fully embrace it doesn't mean that other people won't.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's Reprisal on Hulu. Have they dropped all the episodes already, or once a week?
I think this is one where they've dropped all of it. I believe so. I can never keep up with what Hulu does with their release thing, which they need to get straight, because it's much too hard to try to figure out which shows are coming weekly, which shows are three, which shows are dropped all at once. Gotta be more clear on that. Hulu.
It's a pretty cool cast, though, because I'm looking, and Rory Cochrane is in it, and who, Slater from Dazed and Confused. I love that guy.
And it's not, you know, I used to really like him back in the mid '90s. He was my favorite kind of quirky, weird,
yeah,
stoner,
yep,
character actor.
Yep.
This is not him doing that. This is him kind of trying to be a bit of a badass. He's got a beard. He's got tattoos. He's like, growly, I'm Rory Cochrane, growly, as opposed to the sort of laconic stoner thing that he did so well. He was so funny in like a half dozen great indie movies,
yeah,
in the,
yeah,
90s.
Yeah, no question. No question.
Yeah, it's an interesting cast. You know, Perlman pops up. And he's having at least a little bit of fun, and he's probably the only guy in the cast who makes any sort of imprint at all, unfortunately. The interesting things about it, given an episode or two, if you're interested, you know, and if you're a fan of Abigail Spencer, definitely worth checking out. For
yeah, I'm a big fan of Abigail Spencer. I think she's great. We do have a text that just came in from someone. Is Ozark returning?
Ozark is definitely returning at some point, but it has not been announced when it's returning.
Okay, but it is coming back.
Yeah, I would assume probably late spring, because I assume Netflix will probably want it to be in the Emmy race for next year, but it doesn't have a premiere date, and they haven't made any specific announcements about trailer or anything like that.
All right, there you go, but it is coming back. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, Dan, you wrote about your reaction to the Golden Globe nominations. I have them in front of me, and you wrote a piece about the Golden Globe TV head scratchers. So let's talk a little bit about what were your thoughts on the Golden Globe nominations in the TV department there.
They were interesting. As you know, whenever we talk about these awards, my perspective is if I concentrate on the good things, I can be happy with them. So, for example, a lot of nominations for Succession and for Fleabag, and as I assume we'll talk about later, those two shows are very, very high in my top 10 this year.
Yeah.
So you know, if you're recognizing the best shows on TV and giving them nominations, that's a plus. On the other hand, zero nominations for Watchmen, for example, as a relatively new show that really probably could have used the Golden Globes to make a smash. And then there are all of the things that they missed out on in sort of very obvious ways. Like, I don't even know how you don't nominate When They See Us in the movie miniseries category. And with the answer being, it's the Hollywood Foreign Press, and they're a very susceptible group when it comes to star presence, and if Hulu simply did a better job of getting the good people from Catch-22, like George Clooney, in front of them, that's probably how the voters voted. And so there you have Catch-22 nominated in several key categories where you definitely could have nominated When They See Us and Gerald Jerome and a couple of those stars, because it's a great cast and entirely shut out. But you know, a lot of the things they nominated were solid things. They dove in entirely on Apple Plus with a bunch of nominations for the morning show, and that was the kind of thing you knew they were going to like, both because big stars and also I assume Apple made a big push with them. So it was a predictably annoying and quirky group. I think they could have done a much better job of inclusivity. I think three actors of color out of 40 nominees is just embarrassing and doesn't really in any way reflect what TV looks like at this point. It's not even, you know, it doesn't reflect society. You could do better looking at what's on TV. You could nominate Regina King. You could nominate Gerald Jerome. You could nominate Sandra Oh, who hosted your darn show last year.
Yeah,
some strange choices, maybe a few fewer abominations than some years from the Golden Globes, but, you know, they're a silly group.
Yeah. Well, it's always, I mean, we went through the nominations on both sides of for the movies and for TV. And, I mean, you know, I on the movie side, I was like, some of these choices are really bad, and you forgot some other great choices that could have been, you know, could have been given. So, yeah. Anyway, but anyway, you wrote a piece about it, about the head scratching of the Golden Globes, which happens every year. We talk about this every year, Dan, where we're always like, what are they doing? You know.
And yet they have this prominence which they really probably don't deserve, and it's a prominence that mostly comes from where they fit in the schedule. They've done a wonderful job of positioning themselves so that the Oscar pundits and that Hollywood thinks that it has become a bellwether, that it is a bellwether for Oscar attention. When it comes to TV, they're basically out to lunch, and sometimes they get things right, and that's nice, but they don't have anything to do with the Emmys or anything. You know, it's a solid 8 months. It's so far that there's no influence between the one and the other.
Right.
But with movies, they've put themselves in a position where we're supposed to pretend to care, and thus we do.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, and they always want the big stars to be there. And we were talking about this when we, you know, we were talking about, you know, because Ricky Gervais is coming back, and he caught some flack a few years ago when he openly made fun of the fact that The Tourist got nominations just because the Golden Globes wanted Hollywood Foreign Press wanted Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie to be in the audience. And you know, he actually talked about that up there on stage, and he was telling the truth. So
he always tells the truth when he's up there, but he can tell the truth because he knows that the HFPA doesn't care. They keep bringing him back. So you know, it's one thing for you to be like, ooh, for everyone to be like, ooh, Ricky Gervais, he tells it like it is, but he tells it like it is to a room full of people who don't really care about being called celebrity fans, you know, that they don't care. So what's the the cost to Ricky Gervais. Anytime he wants to host the Golden Globes, he's welcome to.
Yeah, it's good. I still think he's great, though. I think he does a great job, and he's very entertaining. So, and I think he'll be a great host again. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N. And if you guys have comments or questions or anything like that about TV, talk or text. It's 312-981-7200. More with Dan after this on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Thursday morning. Coming up on a Thursday morning. It's Wednesday night right now, but it'll be Thursday after midnight. Triple Play Thursday will kick in a little bit later on. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you would like to join us. Coming up later in the show, we're going to talk with Stephen Strafford, who is starring in David Sedaris' hilarious play, The Santaland Diaries. He's over at the Goodman Theater with that. We're going to talk about great Christmas movies. We're also going to talk about the stories behind some Christmas traditions. And Gary Larson's Far Side is returning, so we're going to talk about comic strips and things like that. So it's if you want to join us at any time, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us, and it's his biweekly visit, and Dan is joining us to talk TV. You can read him at, you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. Let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Have you, did we speak about The Mandalorian the last time you were here?
I feel like we did. Yeah. I have not watched this week's episode yet. I've heard this week's episode is an improvement. It came out early because of not wanting to overlap with some big movie which has some similar themes that I think is premiering on Thursday or Friday.
So, yeah.
Whatever it is. So they moved it up to Wednesday, and I have not had the chance to get to it, but I hear it is a better and more exciting episode. I felt like the past two or three episodes have been really meandering, but even when it's meandering, it only meanders for 35 minutes, so I don't much care.
Yeah, well, Tom, you feel the same way. You thought the last few episodes of The Mandalorian were a little stale.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they're going with this at this point. I was really excited by it. I was like, this is a kind of cool Western samurai sort of thing, and then it slowed down, and I'm still interested, but I don't know what their game plan is, which is kind of indicative of their movie strategy as well. What's the game plan?
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine just posted on his Facebook page, Mandalorian Episode 7 is your chance to see what it would be like if John Carpenter directed a Star Wars. And then in parentheses, he said, and it's great. So that's enough.
Right? Yeah, that's enough is enough for me.
Yeah. Apple Plus still just humming along. Everybody talks about it. Tom, you have it. And everybody talks about how much content is there. Dan, the content is crazy, right?
The Disney Plus content is ridiculous. It's very much there, though. Everyone I know has basically been rewatching Star Wars movies for the past couple of weeks.
Right.
So I feel like there was kind of the initial round of, ooh, I'm going to go through all of the horrible Disney live action movies from the 70s and 80s
man.
And revisit my childhood and all that. And that was the initial instinct. And then it's kind of settled down to, yeah, I'm watching The Mandalorian. I'm rewatching the Star Wars movies over and over again. And maybe I'm watching Forky answers questions for 3 minutes a week, but you know that still is keeping people actively involved. You know, it's not like people have forgotten that the service exists.
Hold on a second.
The interest has gravitated in some way.
Wait a minute. What is? Explain to me. What is that? Forky from Toy Story.
It is Forky from Toy Story. It is a weekly 3 to 5 minute Forky answers questions. This is exactly what it. Say, oh, see, now you are about to leave this radio program this second and go start watching Forky.
Oh, man. I love that character. I just think it's so, I think that character is so great. One of my favorite characters of any movie this year. Man, oh, man, that's funny. That's funny. And it is Tony Hale doing the voice, right?
It is, of course. Well, come on. Disney doesn't need to go to B-list voices if they can pay Tony Hale. I mean,
right.
Come on.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, there you go. So that's I mistakenly said Apple Plus. Disney Plus is what I meant. Disney Plus is what I was talking about. Okay. All right. So you put together a couple of lists here. We want to go through it. It's the year end, and we're always talking about that kind of stuff. I was going through. I was actually finalizing my top 20 movies of the year yesterday, as I was in the morning yesterday, or I should say this morning. And I'm still tweaking it because, you know, I still have a couple of weeks before I have to get my list out there. But it looks pretty good so far. But let's talk about we'll get into the specific best TV episodes of 2019. But let's talk about your favorite TV shows of 2019. And just in general, what did you think of the TV year, Dan?
I thought, first of all, that you can't make your list until you've seen Cats. This is what I hear. leave a place in your top 20 for Cats.
Yeah,
that is the most important part of this conversation. No, you have to, honestly, you know, you've made these lists before enough times. You know that you simply have to get the list to a point that you're comfortable with and walk away and deal with the fact that you'd probably do it differently the next week.
Yeah.
So, you just have to call it a day and make your peace with whatever it is. No, it was a very good year of TV. What are you going to say? There was constant good stuff. There was just constant stuff. I believe tomorrow morning my worst of 2019 list is going to be up on THR. So
the
thing about having 600 plus scripted original shows is you're probably going to get a lot of really great stuff and you're probably going to get some pretty bad stuff. I think that the things I liked as much as in any year. I think that it was a spectacularly good year for comedy or for things that I think of as comedy, because several of the shows in my top 10 are technically drama by award standards, but that's just because they're hour long. To me, they're comedies. We've talked about at least one of them on many occasions.
Yep.
We'll do it again in a minute.
Yep.
I think it was a great year for TV, and it was a really great year for comedies.
Yeah.
Just lots of great comedy.
All right, very cool. We'll get into that. By the way, before we jump into this, I so love Evil. I love that show. I love that show, and I love the fact that it's gotten as funny as it has been creepy, because there's some the episode from 2 weeks ago was hilarious. Like, the whole episode, I was laughing out loud, and I love that sense of humor.
Which one was that?
I'm trying to remember. I remember it was a couple of weeks ago. But it was the one where they were being deposed and they were being questioned by the lawyer who was the sister of his ex lover, and that's where they were being deposed, and that's the episode I was talking about.
It has definitely gotten much, much more recognizably associated with the Kings, with the creators, it really has been very much a kind of the Good Wife, Good Fight, only with the main characters attempting to fight demonic possession, which to me is kind of the best case scenario version of what the show could be. And so, like, the fall finale, there are only like three more episodes. It's a short season, so it's nearly done. You might want to get over that. but yeah, with the earworm that was getting in people's minds,
oh,
and the social
man, that was so good.
It was great, but it was also totally just a B plot from the Good Wife episode, and I don't mean that in any way as an insult. I just mean it feels so comfortably within that universe, and once you just accept, I like all of these characters and I like what they're doing, it's really easy to settle into. And I think people should probably think about catching up if that sounds like a good thing to them. It has become fairly confident in the thing that it is at this point.
Yeah. I think it's great. It's clearly one of the best shows on broadcast TV, without question. And that last episode that you were just talking about with the earworm, I loved it. And John Dahl directed it, so they're getting some pretty strong directors to come in and work with them. So,
yeah, for sure.
Okay, listen, Dan, let's take a quick break. Okay, and when we come back, we'll dive right into your lists. Okay.
Excellent.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him at The Fine Print, and that's F-E-I-E-N. More with Dan after this.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
Welcome back. Is there a specific reason why we came back from commercial with the Three's Company theme song?
I haven't heard it in a while.
All right. Got to stay relevant in the TV world. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio. Coming up, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg joins us to talk TV. He joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him at the Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick. I can't believe that Tom just spoiled that my number one TV show of 2019 is Three's Company.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
All right, let's get
as good today as they were 35 years ago.
That's right. You know, I watched an episode the other day, and it was the one with the misunderstanding.
I was going to make the joke if you didn't, so just as well.
All right. Let's talk about the best TV shows of modern era of 2019. Let's talk about your list here. Are they in order, like ranked?
I believe they certainly should be, yes.
Oh, okay. Because I don't see any numbers next to them on my... So let's see. Let's start with Dairy Girls. Would that be number 10?
If you are starting with Dairy Girls, that is correct. Yeah, the other lists I've done weren't in order. These ones should be in order.
Okay, all right.
Going from 10 to 1.
So I'll go backwards. So Dairy Girls, which is on Netflix, which is a show that I love. So tell everybody about Dairy Girls and why you chose it.
Because it's nice to sometimes just want to put on a TV show and laugh.
Yeah.
And it's kind of ridiculous to say that the most pleasant and frivolous and light show on TV that I love the most is a show set in the later years of the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And it really does have that as its backdrop. There is the serious stuff that's happening in the background at all times. But this is just a show where, from the first episode, every character was clearly defined and had a voice, where every performance was locked in immediately, and where you can just sit down and smile and be happy and amused at the writing and the performances for 25 or 26 minutes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it suffers from that British-Irish TV problem of the seasons only being six episodes
right.
apiece, so
right.
there's not enough of it, but it's such a pleasant show to watch, and sometimes you need something like that.
I totally agree. I adore the show. I think it's great, and I love the cast. And I I also love Irish accents, so that makes me happy. Right there. Okay, so next on your list, number 9 here is Brockmire, which is a show that I still have not watched.
And as I've said before, you would love it. They make fun of Joe Buck. It is a fantastic show. And it's a fantastic show that started off as a Funny or Die sketch, and it was, ha-ha, here's this ridiculous character that Hank Azaria plays and plays unimaginably well. And then they were like, okay, what if this ridiculous announcer also was a struggling alcoholic with deep depression? And we actually took that relatively seriously within the context of a ridiculous world about a baseball announcer. So it simultaneously is profane and outlandish and over the top and full of some of the deepest inside baseball cuts you could ever get talking about baseball. And then there's actually an astonishingly good character arc that they're tracing out over four seasons. So the season that's on my list is the third season. The fourth season is coming out next year, and it's going to be the last season. It really is just one of the frequently funniest shows on TV. It makes me snort laugh, I would say, more than almost any other show on TV. And yet, they've done this great character work at the same time. So it's both things, and you should definitely check it out.
Okay. All right. Number 8 is When They See Us on Netflix.
Not one of the comedies on my list.
No.
This one is just dark and searing and infuriating and frustrating and all of the things that Ava DuVernay wanted it to be. It's full of wonderful performances, and it does exactly what it sets out to do, which is to fill you with a sense of ungodly injustice, while at the same time having the inspiration of justice having ultimately, too long deferred, been done. It's just a great telling of this horrible yet inspiring story, and it does the things it wants to do extremely well, and it's really important. It's not an easy 4 hours to watch, 4+ hours, but it's just great.
Okay. And that's number seven. Number six is Better Things.
Number seven is Better
Things. Oh, number seven, Better Things.
Yes. We've talked about Better Things once or twice. and when it returns, I assume we will talk about it again.
Oh, yes.
It remains consistently one of the most insightful, sometimes funny, sometimes heartbreaking half hours on TV. And Pamela Adlon is a freaking genius. And, you know, we should all be gratefully appreciative that this show has given her the opportunity to stand out and to show all of the things she can do.
Yeah.
She is a special talent, and this is a great manifestation of that talent.
I totally agree. We talked about it many times. One of my favorite shows on TV. I love it. I love it. Number six, Russian Doll.
A show that didn't need to work. It's kind of a Brooklyn hipster Groundhog Day. How long can that be amusing? And the answer is it's definitely amusing for 3 or 4 episodes. But then when it stops being amusing, it actually becomes dramatic and intriguing and mysterious and passionate. And it holds on to its interest really throughout. It's a great showcase for Natasha Lyonne. It's definitely the best acting she's ever done. And as a co-creator and a director of the fantastic finale, just an amazing showcase for her. Yeah. And I have no idea what they're going to do with the second season. And I have no idea if I want there to be a second season, but the first season is just an impressive achievement.
Okay.
And
all right.
Very good.
Okay. Dan, hang on. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg's with us. We'll get to his top 5 shows of 2019 after the news.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Should I beg your pardon?
I approve of this music bump. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we're here until 4 a.m. Coming up in a little bit, Stephen Strafford, actor from the Santaland Diaries over at the Goodman, is going to join us to talk about that hilarious play that he's in. But we'll return to our conversation. Dan Feinberg is here. He joins us every couple of weeks. He writes about TV for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And here's Dan. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. And yes, The Wire is, as always, my number one show of the year.
Every year, no matter what.
Every year.
All right. We got to get back into your list here. We're into the top 5. Number 5 is Lodge 49, which is a show that I am so glad that you made me watch.
Did you get caught up by the end? I don't know where you finally ended up.
Yeah, no, I'm all caught up.
And unfortunately, that is all there is.
Yep.
This week, creator Jim Gavin said on Twitter that there had been efforts to try to find the show a new home, and unfortunately, they have now given up hope, which is sad.
But it is.
Kind of the nature of what happens if you're a low-rated, quirky show on TV. But people can still check out the 2 seasons because, while it's a little cliffhanger-y at the end of the second season, it's still very, very satisfying, and this is just a show that I struggled over and over again to explain to people.
Yeah.
And I you know, I feel bad about that, because if I had a clear description of it, maybe it would have gotten more people to watch. But it's a funny, weird, unique show, and all of the people in it were wonderful, and that's not just the leads like Wyatt Russell and Brent Jennings and Sonia Cassidy, who is going to be a huge star at some point. It's every single one of the actors in the ensemble, including your friend, but everyone's friend, because they all become your friends by the end of the show.
Yeah.
It's just a special, strange show, and won't be for everybody, but it will be for a lot of people, and people will just have to discover it down the road, I guess.
Yeah, it's a terrific show. Okay, number 4, Watchmen. I'm not caught up on this.
Just just another show that didn't need to work. And in fact, probably had everything working against it in terms of it working. And Damon Lindelof pulled off something so impressive with this show. He made a show that built on the classic comic, that enriched the classic comic, that didn't replace it in any way, but simply said, here is another text within this universe that is as valid and as rich as the richest of comic texts. Full of great performances, top to bottom, from Regina King, Tim Blake Nelson, so many Jeremy Irons, so many wonderful performances, and like a half dozen wonderful episodes. Nearly standalone, wonderful episodes. Just a show that could have fallen apart at any time and somehow didn't.
Okay. All right. Number three, Rammy.
Another show that is full of standout episodes. Rami Youssef's self-titled Hulu series, which I've been pushing on people since early in the spring and will continue to do. It's a show that's not like anything else. It's a show that takes religion seriously. It happens that religion is Muslim, but it takes it seriously in the way that many people take religion seriously. It's a show that found interesting things to do with its half hours. It did flashback episodes. It spent two episodes in Egypt. It's just wonderful storytelling, wonderful character work, and just a show with a lot of things on its mind, and made all the more impressive by the fact that Rami Youssef had never done a TV show before this, and just so confident and so immediately assured. If you haven't watched it, it's on Hulu. You can get through it quick. Great show.
Okay. And then number two, Succession. I love that show.
It is a fantastic show that had a fantastic second season, and I think it's been number two on my list last year and this year, mm-hmm. So that's pretty consistent. It's a great show and made a big step forward in terms of its profile this year, and I would love to see it keep taking those steps, so I'd love to see it win the Golden Globe for drama, even though it's a comedy.
Right.
I'd love to see it get 15 Emmy nominations in the fall. I just want to see it build because it is such a good show, and we should all appreciate it before it falls off a cliff, because right. Everything great falls off a cliff, I feel like. So let's cherish it now.
Yeah, Succession on HBO, great, great show. And then your number one show is Fleabag.
And the best way to avoid falling off a cliff is to say that season two is going to be your last season and you're done. So way to go, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. You've made it so that your show will definitely not get any worse, and we will have to be left with the six nearly perfect episodes of this second season. It is remarkable. I've watched the premiere three or four times. I've watched the finale three or four times. For some reason, I haven't watched the episodes in the middle as much. It's just such a great show, and each time I watch, I find something else to be fascinated by. Like, I think, for example, that Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a much better actress than a lot of people give her credit for, because everyone's like, ooh, she's a fantastic writer, let's not even look. I think she is an amazingly nuanced actress, and so good at both comedy and drama.
Yeah.
Entire cast, wonderful, from Andrew Scott to Olivia Colman to Sean Clifford. Just a great season of a great show, and anyone who hasn't watched Fleabag yet, it's only two seasons, six episodes per season, half hour per episode. That's as fast a binge of as good a show as you can find.
There you go. All right, let's go into your list of TV episodes. And now, again, you said you didn't actually rank these. These are just random.
I did not rank these. For my performances list, I said no performances that are on my top 10 shows. For the episodes list, I included a few from my top 10, but tried to honestly bring in as many different shows as possible.
Okay.
Just because, yeah.
Okay, well, the first one that we're going to talk about is my favorite episode of television from 2019, and that's Ronnie Lilly from Barry. I can't tell you how many times I've rewatched that episode of television.
It's just a great episode, and some of these are very obvious, and Ronnie Lilly is definitely one that everyone knew was going to be on every list. It's a Coen Brothers movie in 30 minutes, and says so much about Bill Hader as a writer, as an actor, and as a director. Just another of these amazing showcases for these amazingly talented people.
Yep, I agree. All right, Grandma's Day from Baskets.
I wanted to get Baskets in somewhere in one of these lists, and this seemed like a great way to do it. Grandma's Day was the anti-penultimate episode of the final season, yeah. So the third to last episode, and just a great showcase for the show's heart and for Louis Anderson. The A plot of the episode is Louis Anderson's character going around Bakersfield talking to her granddaughter about the family roots in Bakersfield, yeah. And it's funny and passionate and so sweet and just amazing when you think that it's, you know, Louis Anderson, and yeah. This is a, you know, a wacky comedy starring Zach Galifianakis, and it's doing all these things.
It's a beautiful show. A great show. Surprise from BoJack Horseman.
Just a great farce. You know, not one of those BoJack episodes that's incredibly tonally ambitious or that shocks you by how deep it goes. What it does is it says, okay, farce is really complicated to do with live action people, but if you're doing it with cartoons, you can make everything so much more heightened, and it's just amazingly orchestrated. Yeah. It's just so funny and so fun. I loved that episode.
Yeah, me too. I love that show. Stories from Broad City. What a great final season for them.
It was a great final season. It was a great episode. And as I said in my little blurb, I don't think of it as being a visually distinctive show all the time, but a lot in that final season, they were playing around with the form in ways that maybe they hadn't done before. And this is the premiere, which was all about the social media experiences. They went for a walk through Manhattan on Abby's 30th birthday. It's just such a fun use of what could have been a really annoying conceit, and I just thought it was a great episode.
Me too. Now, here's a show I've never seen. David Makes Man, and the episode is David Sky.
Yes, this is the pilot of David Makes Man, which is on OWN, and people should check it out. It's just not a show that a lot of people talked about, and just watch the pilot. It was written by the co-writer of Moonlight. It's just a beautiful tone poem about a young boy in Florida navigating between the prep school where he's trying to improve his life and his home life in the projects. And it's just beautiful and poetic. And not every episode that came afterwards reached the same aesthetic levels, but it's just a great introduction to a world. And it's a show that needs more people talking about it.
It's on OWN, by the way. Documentary Now, original cast album Co-op on IFC. Documentary Now, hilarious show.
Documentary Now is a great show. I still, you know, it is one of the marvels of peak TV that this is a show that's, you know, gotten three seasons and counting of doing these ridiculously nerdy documentary parodies. And this was one of the all-time best with a handful of terrific, fully realized company parody songs. Just if you like Documentary Now, you probably loved this episode. It's tremendous.
Yeah. Episode one of Fleabag.
Perfect. It is the best one-act play of the year, and orchestrated chaos where every single beat works perfectly. It's wonderfully directed. It's wonderfully written. Every performance is great. It's shocking. It advances the story. It's just such a good episode of TV. It's a stunningly good episode of TV.
Okay. Cairo Cowboy from Rami.
This is, I believe, the finale of the first season, one of the two Egypt set episodes. And this is a show that really had five episodes that could have been in my top 10 easily. This just happens to be the one that I thought people weren't talking about nearly enough.
Right.
But it shows that the show can take you to worlds you've never seen before simply by going to Egypt and looking at characters in a new way. Okay. And just a great episode of TV.
Tuca and Birdie, which was abruptly canceled. The Jelly Lakes you chose.
Still angry about that.
Yeah.
Still don't understand it. And Tuca and Birdie was a great show, and people should be seeking it out. This one, much more than the BoJack Horseman episode, was a kind of formally experimental, tonally experimental episode of Tuca and Birdie, and the one that got into the characters, PTSD, etc.
Yeah.
It's just a great episode of TV, but a really good show that deserved better than only one season.
Then finally, Little Fear of Lightning from Watchmen.
Yes, this was the Tim Blake Nelson-centric episode that I loved because it's an episode of Leftovers that happens to focus on Tim Blake Nelson's character from Watchmen. And it's just such a good look at a character who could have been enigmatic in so many different ways and finds a way to get you to understand him. If people wanted to say that they preferred the penultimate episode of the first season, I am entirely on board with you wanting to say that. If people wanted to say they loved the sixth episode, which was the largely black and white episode, totally there. And if people wanted to love the pilot most, I am right there for that as well. This is the one that got me the most, but like Rami, Watchmen had 5 or 6 episodes that could have made this list.
Got it. Okay, Dan, always a pleasure. We will talk to you again after, I believe, we're not going to talk until after the holidays, correct? Yeah, New Year.
If that is the case, then have a glorious holidays to you all.
Same to you, Dan, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Good okay. talking to
Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's great. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Okay, we'll take a break.